It's the 14th of August, 2025, and you're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today we have news from our military news websites, stripes.com and the like, as well as the websites and newsletters from our Veterans Service Organizations and the Veterans Administration. Our first item is from Stripes.com by Linda F. Hershey from the 7th of August. VA ends contracts for most of its unionized employees. Washington. The Department of Veterans Affairs on Wednesday terminated collective bargaining agreements for most of its more than 350,000 unionized employees, including nurses, food service workers, technicians, and janitorial staff. The VA's move to end contracts with more than a half dozen unions prompted rebukes from labor leaders. VA Secretary Doug Collins' decision to rip up the negotiated union contract for a majority of its workforce is another clear example of retaliation against union members for speaking out against the illegal, anti-worker, and anti-veteran policies of this administration, said Everett Kelly, national president of the American Federation of Government Employees. In addition to the AFGE, other unions affected by the contract terminations are AFL-CIO, National Nurses Organizing Committee, National Nurses United, National Association of Government Employees, National Federation of Federal Employees, and Service Employees International Union. Too often, unions that represent VA employees fight against the best interests of veterans while protecting and rewarding bad workers, VA Secretary Doug Collins said. We're making sure VA resources and employees are singularly focused on the job we were sent here to do, providing top-notch care and service to those who wore the uniform. But Collins said contracts for an estimated 4,000 VA police officers, firefighters, and security guards will remain in place. About 80% of VA's 470,000 employees belong to a union, according to USA Jobs, the federal jobs site. Collins recently had backpedaled on a plan to cut 80,000 workers across the agency after large protests by advocates and workers and complaints from lawmakers. Subsequently, union officials indicated Collins' decision to end the contracts surprised them. The VA's announcement followed President Donald Trump's executive order in April directing the elimination of collective bargaining at certain federal agencies, including the VA, as a way to enhance national security. The VA serves as the backstop health care provider for wounded troops in wartime, the White House said. President Trump is taking action to ensure that agencies vital to national security can execute their missions without delay and protect the American people. The president needs a responsive and accountable civil service to protect our national security. Across the government, collective bargaining units represent more than half of the 2.1 million civilian employees, according to USA Jobs. The largest union representing VA employees is AFGE, which has more than 135,000 members. Many of those union members are veterans themselves, according to the organization. The real reason Collins wants AFGE out of the VA is because we have successfully fought against disastrous anti-veteran recommendations that would have closed rural hospitals, cut VA staff, and dismantled veteran health care, Kelly said. We don't apologize for protecting veteran health care and will continue to fight for our members and the veterans they care for. But VA officials complained Wednesday that employees were using their work hours and VA office space to conduct union activities authorized by union contract. The VA said it stopped withholding union dues from most employees' paychecks in April. VA employees spent 750,000 working hours on union activities in 2024, the VA said. With no collective bargaining obligations, those hours can now be used to serve veterans instead of union bosses, the VA said. The VA also said more than 187,000 square feet of building space at the VA will now be converted for office and clinical use. Today's decision will ensure VA facilities are fully focused on helping veterans get the care and benefits they've earned instead of serving as free regional offices for unions that oppose our efforts to improve VA, the agency said. That's VA ends contracts for most of its unionized employees. Our next article is also by Linda F. Hershey from the 13th of August. Medical records for 1 million dialysis patients breached in data hack of VA vendor. Washington, a national dialysis center that contracts with the Department of Veterans Affairs, was the target of a ransomware attack breaching veterans' medical records containing Social Security numbers, test results, and health insurance information. DaVita, a major provider of care for patients with kidney disease, disclosed approximately 1 million medical records were exposed in the cyber attack, including the health information of veterans receiving VA-covered dialysis and lab services in their communities. DaVita provided details about patient information potentially compromised in notifications to attorneys general in several states, according to HIPAA Journal, which posts regulatory updates on Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. For the first quarter of 2025, the VA paid $206 million to DaVita to provide dialysis and lab testing services, according to usaspending.gov, a government website on federal spending, including contracts, grants, and loans. The cyber attack hit DaVita's own internal computer systems, exposing some sensitive information from VA patient records, the VA said. Patient names, images of checks, and tax identification numbers might have been exposed in some of the patient files, DaVita said in an announcement. Throughout our response to this matter, patient care delivery has continued. At this time, all major network servers and systems that were impacted have been restored in a secure manner, the company said. Neither the VA nor DaVita would discuss the scope of the cyber attack or the number of veterans' records accessed. Currently, forensic investigators and the FBI continue their work to determine the extent of the breach, the VA said in a written statement. DaVita provides a dialysis and lab services for patients with kidney failure who typically require up to 3 treatments a week, according to the company. The majority of VA patients with end-stage renal disease or kidney failure receive their dialysis and lab tests from community providers, the VA said. Approximately 80% of VA patients received their treatment from community health care providers in fiscal 2021 and 2022, the VA said. End-stage renal disease is more common in veterans than in the general population and requires dialysis or a kidney transplant. About 13,000 new cases are diagnosed each year, the VA said. DaVita, Inc. is one of the nation's largest providers of outpatient dialysis treatments and lab testing services, according to the Securities and Exchange Commission. It processes more than 21 million lab specimens yearly for kidney dialysis patients. DaVita operates more than 2,675 outpatient dialysis centers in 43 states. The data breach affects veterans' records of veterans who receive their dialysis and related lab services through the VA Veteran Community Care Program, according to the VA. Overall, the VA cares for about 600,000 veterans with chronic kidney disease, which develops when kidneys are damaged and unable to properly filter waste and fluids from the blood. Dialysis filters toxins from the body when the kidneys no longer function properly. Demand for kidney dialysis and testing services is growing, and the agency has limited capacity, according to the VA. 1 in 7 Americans is affected by kidney disease, but it impacts approximately 1 in 6 veterans, according to the American Kidney Fund. Veterans impacted by the data breach will be notified and offered up to 12 months of free online monitoring for protection against identity theft through Experian, a national credit rating service, the VA said. The VA Veteran Community Care Program is a network of private health care providers that serve veterans when the VA cannot provide the health services close to home and in a timely manner. DaVita first announced the incident this spring in an SEC filing. DaVita said it was targeted in a ransomware attack that had encrypted parts of its network. VA's own internal computer systems were not affected in the computer hack, the VA said. And that's medical records for 1 million dialysis patients breached in data hack of VA vendor. Our next article is from the 8th of August and the MilitaryTimes.com website. Apollo 13 mission leader, Navy veteran James Lovell, dies at 97. This is by Don Babwin of the Associated Press, reported on MilitaryTimes.com, Chicago. James Lovell, the commander of Apollo 13, who helped turn a failed moon mission into a triumph of on-the-fly can-do engineering, has died. He was 97. Lovell died Thursday in Lake Forest, Illinois, NASA said in a statement on Friday. Jim's character and steadfast courage helped our nation reach the moon and turned a potential tragedy into a success from which we learned an enormous amount, NASA said. We mourn his passing even as we celebrate his achievements. One of NASA's most traveled astronauts in the agency's first decade, Lovell flew four times, Gemini 7, Gemini 12, Apollo 8, and Apollo 13, with the two Apollo flights riveting the folks back on Earth. Lovell and fellow astronauts Fred Hayes and Jack Swigert received renewed fame with the retelling of the Apollo 13 mission in the 1995 movie Apollo 13, where actor Tom Hanks, portraying Lovell, famously said, "Houston, we have a problem." In 1968, the Apollo 8 crew of Lovell, Frank Borman, and William Anders was the first to leave Earth's orbit and the first to fly to and circle the moon. They could not land, but they put the U.S. ahead of the Soviets in the space race. Letter writers told the crew that their stunning pale blue dot photo of Earth from the moon, a world first, and the crew's Christmas Eve reading from Genesis saved America from a tumultuous 1968. But the big rescue mission was still to come. That was during the harrowing Apollo 13 flight in April 1970. Lovell was supposed to be the fifth man to walk on the moon, but Apollo 13's service module, carrying Lovell and two others, experienced a sudden oxygen tank explosion on its way to the moon. The astronauts barely survived spending four cold and clammy days in the cramped lunar module as a lifeboat. "The thing that I want people most to remember is that, in some sense, it was very much of a success," Lovell said during a 1994 interview. "Not that we accomplished anything, but a success in that we demonstrated the capability of NASA personnel." A retired Navy captain known for his calm demeanor, Lovell told a NASA historian that his brush with death did affect him. "I don't worry about crises any longer," he said in 1999. "Whenever he has a problem, I say, I would have been gone back in 1970. I'm still here. I'm still breathing. So I don't worry about crises." Lovell had ice water in his veins, like other astronauts, but he didn't display the swagger some had, just quiet confidence, said Smithsonian Institution historian Roger Laumas. He called Lovell a very personable, very down-to-earth type of person who says, "This is what I do. Yes, there's risk involved. I measure risk." In all, Lovell flew four space missions, and until the Skylab flights of the mid-70s, he held the world record for the longest time in space, with 715 hours, 4 minutes, and 57 seconds. Aboard Apollo 8, Lovell described the oceans and landmasses of Earth. "What I keep imagining is, if I'm some lonely traveler from another planet, what I would think about the Earth at this altitude, whether I think it would be inhabited or not," he remarked. That mission may be as important as the historic Apollo 11 moon landing, a flight made possible by Apollo 8, Laumas said. "I think that in the history of spaceflight, I would say that Jim was one of the pillars of the early spaceflight program," Gene Kranz, NASA's legendary flight director, once said. But if historians consider Apollo 8 and Apollo 11 the most significant of the Apollo missions, it was during Lovell's last mission that he came to embody for the public the image of the cool, decisive astronaut. The Apollo 13 crew of Lovell, Hayes, and Swigert was on the way to the moon in April 1970 when an oxygen tank from the spaceship exploded 200,000 miles from Earth. That, Lovell recalled, was the most frightening moment in this whole thing. Then oxygen began escaping, and we didn't have solutions to get home. We knew we were in deep, deep trouble, he told NASA's historian. 4/5 of the way to the moon, NASA scrapped the mission. Suddenly, then, their only goal was to survive. Lovell's Houston, we have a problem, is a variation of the comment Swigert had radioed moments before, became famous. What unfolded over the next 4 days captured the imagination of the nation and the world, which until then had largely been indifferent about what seemed to be a routine mission. With Lovell commanding the spacecraft, Crantz led hundreds of flight controllers and engineers in a furious rescue plan. The plan involved the astronauts moving from the service module, which was hemorrhaging oxygen, into the cramped, dark, and frigid lunar lander, while they rationed their dwindling oxygen, water, and electricity. Using the lunar module as a lifeboat, they swung around the moon, aimed for Earth, and raced home. By coolly solving the problems under the most intense pressure imaginable, the astronauts and the crew on the ground became heroes. In the process of turning what seemed routine into a life-and-death struggle, the entire flight team had created one of NASA's finest moments that ranks with Neil Armstrong's and Buzz Aldrin's walks on the moon 9 months earlier. They demonstrated to the world they could handle truly horrific problems and bring them back alive, said Launius. The loss of the opportunity to walk on the moon is my one regret, Lovell said in a 1995 interview with the Associated Press for a story on the 25th anniversary of the mission. President Bill Clinton agreed when he awarded Lovell the Congressional Space Medal of Honor in 1995. While you may have lost the moon, you gained something that's far more important, perhaps, the abiding respect and gratitude of the American people, he said. Lovell once said that while he was disappointed he never walked on the moon, the mission itself and the fact that we triumphed over certain catastrophe does give me a deep sense of satisfaction. And Lovell clearly understood why this failed mission afforded him far more fame than had Apollo 13 accomplished its goal. Going to the moon, if everything works right, it's like following a cookbook. It's not that big a deal, he told the AP in 2004. Something goes wrong, that's what separates the men from the boys. James A. Lovell was born March 25, 1928 in Cleveland. He attended the University of Wisconsin before transferring to the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland. On the day he graduated in 1952, he and his wife Marilyn were married. A test pilot at the Navy Test Center in Patuxent River, Maryland, Lovell was selected as an astronaut by NASA in 1962. He was the last of that second group of astronauts called the Next Nine alive, and thus had been an astronaut longer than any other person alive. Lovell retired from the Navy and from the space program in 1973 and went into private business. In 1994, he and Jeff Kluger wrote Lost Moon, the story of the Apollo 13 mission and the basis for the film Apollo 13. In one of the final scenes, Lovell appeared as a Navy captain, the rank he actually had. He and his family ran a now-closed restaurant in suburban Chicago, Lovell's of Lake Forest. His wife Marilyn died in 2023. Survivors include 4 children. In a statement, his family hailed him as their hero. We will miss his unshakable optimism, his sense of humor, and the way he made each of us feel we could do the impossible, his family said. He was truly one of a kind. And that's Apollo 13 mission leader, Navy veteran James Lovell, dies at 97. We return to Stripes.com for this article from the 12th of August by Linda F. Hershey. Vietnam-era veterans given hallucinogens in secret experiments face VA denials for back pay. Washington. Veterans injured in secret military experiments that tested hallucinogens and nerve gas on young troops more than 50 years ago said their renewed appeals for retroactive disability benefits are being denied, though a federal court directed the payouts. The veterans are counting on a 2023 federal court decision granting full benefits to 75-year-old Army veteran Bob Taylor over injuries from the classified military experiments to bolster their own claims for disability compensation, dating back to their discharges in the 1960s and 1970s. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit in Washington, D.C. instructed the Department of Veterans Affairs to re-examine other claims of lifelong physical and psychological problems connected to the Army experiments at Edgewood Arsenal in Maryland. The claims of illness and injuries range from severe post-traumatic stress disorder and memory loss to hypertension and cancer. This has been going on for 60 years now. It's time for them, the VA, to pay up. I have these daily intrusive thoughts. They're like nightmares, but I'm wide awake, said Army veteran Dave Dufresne, 79, of Florida, who was given injections of nerve agents as an 18-year-old private first class. But the VA this year rejected additional claims as more Edgewood veterans stepped forward to initiate actions for retroactive disability payments. The compensation at a rate of 100% would result in six-figure payouts, the veterans said. Nearly 8,000 soldiers served as human test subjects in the classified studies the U.S. Army Chemical Corps conducted at Edgewood Arsenal. Though participation was voluntary, the veterans said they thought they would be testing military equipment. All of the veterans denied they'd filed earlier claims, some decades old, said Mark Jones, who is the lawyer representing 15 Edgewood veterans. The VA continues to do everything possible to deny these veterans an earlier effective date, said Jones, who estimates fewer than 3,000 Edgewood veterans are alive. The veterans were unwitting test subjects in experiments that involved administering hallucinogenic drugs and nerve agents, according to court documents. I never knew what I was given in those tests, said Frank Rochelle, 77, of North Carolina, a former Army corporal whose service from 1968 to 1970 included a tour in Vietnam. The drugs were identified only by numbers. The chemical substances were delivered in gas chambers, by injection, or other means. The purpose was to evaluate the potential effectiveness of the chemicals administered in low doses as potential warfare agents, according to Senate hearings in the 1970s. The service members had to sign secrecy oaths that banned them from discussing what happened under the threat of criminal penalty. The oath was not formally lifted until 2011. Rochelle said he learned years later that he was given a series of hallucinogenic drugs. Rochelle, who temporarily lost sight in one eye, said he initially sought medical help from the Raleigh VA Hospital in North Carolina in the 1970s, but the VA said it knew nothing about the experiments. When I then went to file a VA claim, I was told that the tests I took part in had never happened, Rochelle said. The records were sealed. I had no way to prove my case. They thought I was lying. The VA deemed Rochelle unemployable in 2009 because of his persistent problems with concentration and memory loss since the experiments. The designation enabled him to receive 100% monthly disability compensation. But in 2023, Taylor, who lives in Idaho, was the first veteran to receive disability compensation back to his military discharge date for injuries connected to the classified project, according to court documents. The court found the Army's secrecy agreement violated his constitutional rights to discuss his injuries with VA doctors, file claims with the VA, and obtain compensation for those injuries. Taylor, who served from 1969 to 1971, has been diagnosed with multiple cancers, depression, insomnia, and PTSD. But the VA in August turned down Rochelle's appeal for a similar claim seeking full disability payments back to his discharge date in 1970. Dufresne, an Army specialist who served from 1964 to 1967, said the VA also just denied his recent claim seeking disability payments back to his military separation date. He was exposed to chemical warfare agents by injection and in an aerosol spray, according to Army documents. I was in 8 experiments. They put me in a padded room after injecting me with chemicals. Another time they sprayed gas in my face, said Dufresne, who has hallucinations and nightmares that continue. In 2009, Dufresne obtained 100% monthly disability compensation for his injuries. But I want to be paid back to the day I got out of the Army, he said. These problems did not just come on. In rejecting his claim for back pay, the VA said Dufresne already had filed similar claims. Rochelle received a similar response. Both have been awarded disability compensation, but it was not retroactive to their discharge date, the veterans said. I have the same problems today that I had after I went through those experiments as a teen, Dufresne said, of the hallucinations and short-term memory loss. It started right away, and it continues. Nothing has changed. Jones is appealing the denial in the Dufresne case. He argued the federal court ruling in 2023 set a precedent by enabling veterans signing secrecy documents to be retroactively compensated. The Taylor case created the pathway for all other Edgewood veterans to obtain earlier effective dates, he said. The court's remedy was created to address the denial of Edgewood veterans' civil rights claims by the government. And that's Vietnam-era veterans given hallucinogens in secret experiments face VA denials for back pay. Ben Finley of the Associated Press writes our next article and reports it in the militarytimes.com. VA hospitals are finding it hard to fill jobs, Watchdog says. This is from the 13th of August, Norfolk, Virginia. Government-run medical centers serving the nation's veterans have reported an increase in severe staffing shortages, with many hospitals having trouble filling jobs for doctors, nurses, and psychologists, according to an independent watchdog for the Department of Veterans Affairs. Tuesday's report from the VA's Office of Inspector General is based on surveys from late March and early April that were taken at 139 Veterans Health Administration facilities. Severe staffing shortages are not necessarily an indication of vacancies, but refer to particular occupations that are difficult to fill. The surveys were taken just weeks after it was reported in early March that the VA had planned to cut 80,000 jobs out of 484,000 through the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, known as DOGE. The VA later reduced the figure to nearly 30,000 jobs to be cut by this fiscal year's end on September 30th. President Donald Trump's administration said Tuesday that the surveys are unreliable because they do not reflect actual vacancies, which VA officials said were in line with historical averages. But Democrat lawmakers warned that veterans won't get the health care they need as VA positions become harder to fill. The surveys reflected a 50% increase in the reporting of severe staffing shortages for specific jobs, both for clinical occupations that include doctors and psychologists, and for non-clinical jobs that include police and custodial workers. Nearly all of the facilities, 94%, reported a shortage for medical officer occupations that include doctors, while 79% reported shortages for nurses. The report noted that severe shortages for medical officers and nurses have been identified every year in the report since 2014. Pete Kasperwitz, the VA's press secretary, stressed in an email that the report is not based on vacancies and therefore not a reliable indicator of staffing shortages. The report simply lists occupations facilities feel are difficult for which to recruit and retain, so the results are completely subjective, not standardized, and unreliable, Kasperowitz wrote. He said the vacancy rates for doctors and nurses are 14 and 10% respectively, which he said are lower than most other healthcare systems and in line with normal VA historical averages. But Jacqueline Simon, policy director for the American Federation of Government Employees, said the surveys reflect the Trump administration's profound hostility toward the federal workforce and what she said are its plans to ultimately privatize the VA. This is a deliberate effort to incapacitate and to undermine veterans' supports for and approval of the care they receive in VA hospitals and clinics, Simon said. They'll have to wait much longer for appointments. There won't be specialists available. They'll have no choice but to go to the private sector. Simon also noted the VA's announcement last week that it was terminating collective bargaining agreements for most VA bargaining unit employees, which could further hurt recruitment. VA said in a news release that the move will make it easier for VA leaders to promote higher-performing employees, hold poor performers accountable, and improve benefits and services to American veterans. But U.S. Senator Mark Warner, Democrat, said in a news release Tuesday that the Trump administration has made it harder for public servants to do their jobs and ultimately harder for veterans to get the care they've earned. We also know from recent jobs reports that applications to work at the VA are plummeting, said Warner, a Democrat who represents the veteran-dense state of Virginia. How do skyrocketing staffing shortages and declining applicant pools make it more efficient for veterans to access the care and services they deserve? The answer is they don't. And that's VA hospitals are finding it harder to fill jobs, Watchdog says. You're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. I'd like to remind you that you can listen to Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming, streaming, or at a time of your choosing on the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org or on the Sun Sounds of Arizona app, available for your iPhone or iPad from the Apple App Store or for your Android phone or tablet from the Google Play Store. And you can always listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona streaming on your Amazon Dot or Echo. We'll turn now to the August edition of the American Legion magazine for their health and fitness section by Jennifer Campbell. This item is entitled, Listen to Your Gut. Our gut microbiome comprises trillions of microorganisms, bacteria, viruses, and fungi that reside in our digestive tract and are integral to various bodily functions, including digestion, immune response, and even mood regulation. But as we age, the diversity and balance of these microbial communities can decline. That often leads to dysbiosis, which has been linked to increased inflammation, weakened immunity, and a higher risk of chronic diseases. One of the most overlooked consequences of poor gut health is impaired nutrient absorption. Inflammation and damage to the gut lining can compromise the absorption of iron, vitamin B12, magnesium, and fat-soluble vitamins A, D, E, and K. This leaves the body starved for vital nutrients even when the diet is otherwise balanced. A damaged gut lining can lead to what's known as leaky gut syndrome or increased intestinal permeability. In this condition, the normally tight junctions between intestinal cells becomes loose, allowing partially digested food particles, bacteria, and toxins to leak into the bloodstream. This can trigger systemic inflammation and immune reactions that further harm gut health and nutrient absorption. Over time, this cycle can contribute to chronic fatigue, brain fog, skin issues, and autoimmune diseases. According to the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases, at least 60 million Americans suffer from digestive diseases, many linked to impaired gut function. The effects of poor gut health include bloating, diarrhea, constipation, and cramps. Long-term dysbiosis and leaky gut can contribute to inflammatory bowel diseases, autoimmune conditions, skin disorders like eczema and acne, metabolic syndrome, and even neurological diseases, and the condition may allow pathogens and toxins to enter the bloodstream, promoting chronic inflammation throughout the body. How to support and restore your gut. Eat fiber-rich foods. Aim for diverse sources from fruits, vegetables, legumes, and whole grains. Fiber nourishes beneficial bacteria and promotes a robust gut lining. Add fermented foods. Yogurt, kefir, kimchi, and sauerkraut introduce live probiotics that restore microbial balance. Stay hydrated. Proper hydration keeps the gut lining healthy and digestion smooth. Cut processed foods and added sugars. These can promote harmful bacteria and worsen gut inflammation. Manage stress. Chronic stress negatively affects gut permeability and microbial balance. Techniques like deep breathing, exercise, and meditation help. Take probiotics and prebiotics. Supplements or food-based sources can support gut health, especially after antibiotic use. Prioritize sleep. Restful sleep is essential for gut repair and reducing inflammation. Our author, Army veteran Jennifer Campbell, is a certified personal trainer with a master's degree in nutrition education. That's Listen to Your Gut from the Health and Fitness column of the August American Legion magazine. Our next article is from MilitaryTimes.com by Dave Kindy. It's a little bit of military history. Paul Newman, the Pacific and the bomb that changed the world. This is from the 6th of August. On August 6, 1945, a 19-year-old U.S. sailor was serving aboard the aircraft carrier Hollandia, about 500 miles off the coast of Japan, when he learned the U.S. had just obliterated Hiroshima with a new superweapon, an atomic bomb with the force of 20,000 tons of TNT. A more powerful bomb was dropped at Nagasaki 3 days later. There is no record of what the aviation radio man third class said or thought when he heard the news, though he likely exhaled a sigh of relief. That seaman, along with millions of men preparing for the invasion of Japan, hoped the bombs would spare more lives by bringing an end to World War II, the bloodiest conflict in history. Years later, the sailor, who went on to fame as the celebrated actor Paul Newman, would reflect on that experience. Even though Newman later advocated for nuclear disarmament, he was thankful for the atomic bombs because he was certain he would not survive the amphibious landings on the Japanese home islands planned for later that year. Paul was a radioman and a rear gunner in a two-man fighter-bomber that was carrier-based, he recalled close friend and historian Richard Rhodes, who won the Pulitzer Prize in 1987 for the book The Making of the Atomic Bomb. He was all over the place in the Pacific Theater and felt lucky to survive. Newman's perilous path to World War II began on January 22, 1943, when he enlisted in the U.S. Navy, 4 days shy of his 18th birthday. He was sent to Yale University for the V-12 officer training program, where he hoped to become a pilot, but washed out when his piercing blue eyes couldn't pass the color blindness test. Newman later admitted he also couldn't do the science needed to fly airplanes. However, the future actor qualified for torpedo bombers and flew in a Grumman TBF Avenger with Torpedo Squadron 84. His unit was assigned to the aircraft carrier Bunker Hill, but he never made it to the carrier because his pilot had been grounded with an ear infection. That turned out to be a stroke of fortune. On May 11, 1945, at the Battle of Okinawa, the ship was struck by two kamikazes in quick succession, causing extensive damage and killing 396 men, including members of his squadron. All told, the bloody fight for Okinawa cost more than 12,000 U.S. lives, including 5,000 sailors. The battle signaled a change in defensive strategies, clearly demonstrating how Japan was determined to extend the war by inflicting massive Allied casualties with fight-to-the-death tactics. The war in the Pacific was evolving into a grisly slugfest of attrition with no end in sight. Now that the Japanese were defending their home islands, they had the beach defenses and short flights for kamikazes, along with suicide missions by midget submarines, frogmen, and more, said retired Rear Admiral Samuel J. Cox, director of Naval History and Heritage Command and curator of the Navy. They even had civilians ready to fight with sharpened sticks. The Japanese military was prepared to sacrifice the whole country. Operation Downfall was set to begin November 1, 1945, with 700,000 American Marines and soldiers, along with British and Commonwealth forces, landing at Kyushu, the third largest Japanese island. The U.S. Navy would support the invasion with more than 3,000 ships, while the U.S. Army Air Forces would fly cover with nearly 3,000 fighters and bombers. Because of the fierce resistance at Okinawa, American military planners estimated that conquering Japan would result in 1 million-plus casualties for the United States. Newman was convinced he would not live through the battle. Some projections estimated Japanese losses to exceed 20 million. The U.S. numbers might have been conservative, Cox said. The Allies didn't know it at the time, but the Japanese had correctly guessed where the landings would take place and had moved more than 900,000 men there. President Harry Truman worried that the invasion, the largest amphibious assault ever planned, would result in too many deaths. The decision was made to use the atomic bombs and hope the Japanese would surrender. Truman did not want a repeat of Okinawa, Cox said. A blockade was already underway, but the prospect of starving 100 million Japanese to death wasn't appealing. The atomic bombs, along with the Soviets entering the war against Japan, convinced the enemy to surrender. On September 2, 1945, Japanese leaders signed the instrument of surrender aboard the battleship Missouri in Tokyo Bay. Newman was soon on his way back to the U.S., where he went to college under the GI Bill and got bit by the acting bug. He began appearing on stage and in TV shows and movies, including his breakthrough role as boxer Rocky Graziano in the film Somebody Up There Likes Me in 1956. Newman continued to garner acclaim and Academy Award nominations for such films as Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, The Hustler, Cool Hand Luke, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, The Sting, and others. He earned the Academy Award for Best Actor in 1986 for The Color of Money. For the 1989 movie Fat Man and Little Boy, Newman agreed to portray Colonel Leslie Groves of the U.S. Army, who oversaw the Manhattan Project to develop the atomic bomb. For that role, Newman sought out Rhodes. He wanted insight into portraying Groves, so he met with the historian to find out what he had learned in writing his best-selling book about building the bomb. That initial interview blossomed into a mutual affection that endured for years. It was a nice, quiet friendship, he recalled, adding, "He was a sweet man." When their schedules permitted, they met for dinners and drinks. It was during one of those private meals when the subject of World War II came up. When asked about the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Newman was forthright in his answer, Rhodes recalled. "I remember him telling me that he had been over there and specifically that he was training for the invasion of Japan," Rhodes said. "I was talking about the deep complexity of using the bomb, how people had such mixed feelings. That's when he said, 'You know, Dick, I'm one of those guys who said, thank God for the atomic bomb. He was training for an invasion that was going to be horrible and bloody, and he would be damn lucky if he got out of it with his life.'" Rhodes was somewhat surprised by the answer, given that he knew Newman was active in the movement to end the proliferation of nuclear weapons, and had even served as a U.S. delegate at a United Nations disarmament conference. Still, he understood what his friend was saying. "You have to remember, we were really angry at the Japanese," said Rhodes, who was 8 years old when the war ended in 1945. "They wouldn't surrender. We knew they were defeated. We'd destroyed their navy. We'd destroyed their air force. Effectively, their people were starving." Rhodes and Newman continued to be friends long after the movie. Sometimes with their families, they'd get together for movie premieres at racetracks. Newman was an avid race car enthusiast and even competed in races. And the Hole-in-the-Wall Gang Camp, a program for children and their families coping with chronic illnesses established by the Newman's own foundation. The last time Rhodes saw his friend was in 2008, just before Newman's death from cancer. They had lunch together at the actor's penthouse in New York City. "I understood that he was seriously ill," the historian remembered. "I had the chance to say to him, 'Paul, I don't know what's going to happen, but I just want you to know this has been a wonderful friendship.' He looked at me and said, 'For me too.'" I get chills just reciting that story. That's Paul Newman, The Pacific, and the bomb that changed the world. Well, let's turn now to the Veterans Administration. And we have this item from news.va.gov. VA processes more claims in a single year than ever before. This is from the 13th of August. Backlog of veterans waiting for VA benefits is down 37% since January the 20th. Washington. The Department of Veterans Affairs announced today it has processed more disability benefits, compensation, and pension ratings claims in a single year than ever before. In fiscal year 2024, VA processed a total of 2,517,519 ratings claims, and this year the department reached an all-time high of 2,524,115 ratings claims issued August the 8th, nearly 2 months before the end of FY25. The milestone is the latest in a string of noteworthy VA claims processing achievements. Since President Trump was inaugurated on January 20th, the backlog of veterans' waitings for VA benefits has dropped by more than 37%, after rising 24% during the Biden administration. In July, VA completed more than 300,000 ratings claims in a single month for the first time ever. VA is processing claims faster in FY25 than in FY24, completing them 17.8% faster, even as receipts are 10% higher than this time last year. Under President Trump, VA is making major improvements to better serve veterans, and this announcement underscores that fact, said VA Secretary Doug Collins. We look forward to implementing more reforms to increase customer service and convenience for those we are charged with serving. Other highlights of VA's accomplishments during the second Trump administration include: VA has opened 16 new healthcare clinics around the country. Since January 20th, VA has offered veterans nearly 1 million appointments outside of normal operating hours. These early morning, evening, and weekend appointments are giving veterans more timely and convenient options for care. VA is spending an additional $800 million on infrastructure improvements to ensure VA facilities provide safe and effective patient care. VA has made it easier and faster for VA-enrolled veterans to access care from non-VA providers at the department's expense. VA has implemented major reforms to make it easier for survivors to get benefits after serious problems during the Biden administration. VA is accelerating the deployment of its integrated electronic health record system after the program was nearly dormant for almost 2 years under the Biden administration. VA partnered with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services to identify and recover $106 million in duplicate billing. VA is phasing out treatment for gender dysphoria. Frankly, this common sense reform should have been done years ago, but only President Trump and Secretary Collins had the courage to do it. VA ended DEI at the department, reversing the divisive Biden-era policies and stopping more than $14 million in DEI spending. And VA has brought tens of thousands of VA employees back to the office, where VA can work better as a team to serve veterans. VA encourages all veterans to visit va.gov to learn more and apply for the care and benefits they have earned. And that's VA processes more claims in a single year than ever before. Now we have a couple of reminders from the Phoenix Veterans Administration healthcare system. We have, first of all, the movie night that they're having on August 18th, 2025, from 6 to 8 p.m. This is at 300 East Indian School Road at the Steele Indian School Park Memorial Hall. In preparation of August 21st, plaque dedication ceremony of Major Fanny Griffin McClendon of the World War II 6th 888th Battalion. Fanny Griffin McClendon plaque dedication ceremony will be August the 21st from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., and you're cordially invited to attend the plaque dedication at the Steele Indian School Park Memorial Hall in honor of the last surviving member of the 6th 888th Battalion, Major Fanny Griffin McClendon. And that will be, of course, after that movie night on August 18th at the Steele Indian School Park, 300 East Indian School Road, at their memorial hall. Then we have the Navajo Code Talkers Day. That'll be August the 14th, 2025, connecting homeless and at-risk veterans and their families with essential community services. And again, there will be a Wounded Warrior Project, Arizona Work, with the Department of Economic Security, Honor Health, Carry Me Productions, Brain Injury Alliance, Arizona, the Arizona Complete Health, U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, the Voice of Arizona Veterans, Banner University Health Plans, Blue Cross Blue Shield Arizona, Solari Crisis and Human Service, the U.S. Vets Phoenix, Military One Source, Mercy Care, ASU Thunderbird, Soldier's Best Friend, Hospice of the Valley. This will be at the Navajo Nation Fairgrounds, U.S. Marine Corps World War II Navajo Code Talkers Association. Extended information, you can contact the Navajo Nation Veterans Administration at 928-871-7307 or NNVAFORTD@navajo-nsn.gov. And those are the items from the Phoenix area Veterans Healthcare System. Next, from news.va.gov, we have, I'm fine, but are you really? If you're facing challenges, sharing how you feel could save your life. This is from the 13th of August by Dr. Matthew Miller, Executive Director, VA Suicide Prevention. How many times a day do you hear the question, how are you, and respond automatically with, I'm fine? But let's be real, how often does I'm fine actually mean we're fine? For many veterans, it's easier to say it than to open up about what's really going on inside. And here's the thing, pretending everything's okay doesn't make the struggles go away. In fact, it can lead you down a dangerous road, one that could even lead to a crisis or worse. You don't have to wait until you hit rock bottom to take action. Preventing a crisis is possible, and it starts with acknowledging things aren't always as fine as they seem. Whether it's stress, anxiety, or the weight of life's challenges, bottling it up won't make it disappear. It'll just make it harder to deal with when it all piles up. Recognizing the warning signs. Here's the truth. Everyone has their breaking point, but the key to preventing a crisis is to recognize when things are heading in that direction before they get out of hand. So what should you be watching for? And here are some of the common warning signs that might indicate things are taking a turn. Feeling sad or depressed most of the time. Hopelessness, feeling like there's no way out. Anxiety, agitation, mood swings, or sleeplessness. Excessive guilt, shame, or a sense of failure. Rage or anger, feeling out of control. Increasing alcohol or drug misuse. Losing interest in hobbies, work, or relationships. Giving away prized possessions as if you're preparing for something. No two people are the same and no two struggles look the same. That's why it's crucial to take a moment and ask yourself, how am I really doing? No matter what the answer is, don't ignore it. Veteran Self-Check Assessment, a first step. If you're unsure of where you stand, VA's Veterans Self-Check Assessment is a great place to start. That's available at www.vetselfcheck.org. That's all one word, vetselfcheck.org/welcome.cfm. It's free, confidential, and takes about 10 minutes. The assessment helps you identify whether stress or depression might be affecting your well-being, and it gives you clear next steps and resources to start the path toward feeling better. The best part? It's tailored for veterans by people who understand what you're going through. The safety plan. Be prepared just in case. Now, let's talk about the safety plan. It's one of those tools that you might not think you need until you do. The VA Safety Plan app, and that's at mobile.va.gov/app/safety-plan, is a personalized guide for when things feel like they're spiraling. It helps you be prepared if a crisis hits, and it walks you through 6 essential steps. Recognize the warning signs that you're headed into crisis mode. Write down coping strategies you can use on your own. Identify healthy distractions, places to go, things to do, people to talk to. List trusted friends and family you can reach out to when you need support. Write down mental health professionals or crisis lines you can contact in a pinch. List specific steps to stay safe, like limiting access to harmful items. Having a safety plan in place isn't a replacement for professional care, but it's a smart, practical tool to have at the ready. Give me a lifeline when everything feels overwhelming, helping you take control of the situation before it gets worse. Don't stay silent. The reason I'm so passionate about getting this message out is simple. Don't stay silent. When we keep everything locked inside, we end up following a path of isolation, and that's dangerous. If you're struggling, don't just say, "I'm fine," and leave it at that. Speak up. Share what you're really feeling, because the truth is that might just be what saves your life. Simon and Garfunkel nailed it in their song, The Sound of Silence. People talking without speaking. People hearing without listening. And no one dared disturb the sound of silence. We're here to make sure the silence is broken, to make sure veterans are heard, and to give you the tools you need to stay safe. You're not alone in this. VA is ready to help every step of the way. If you're feeling like you're on the edge, reach out. The Veterans Crisis Line is always here to listen and guide you through. And if you're unsure about where you stand emotionally, take the self-check assessment. It only takes a few minutes, but it could be the first step toward reclaiming your peace of mind. Remember, you don't have to wait for things to get worse. The tools are available, and it's never too early to use them. And that's, I'm fine, but are you really? And just as a reminder, there will be a walk or ruck in Flagstaff that will take place on the 13th of September. These activities will commemorate the 22 veterans a day that commit suicide in our country. I'll have more information on this event. There'll be a 22-mile ruck carrying 22 pounds. There'll also be a 1-kilometer walk and a 5-kilometer run as part of this commemoration. So as I get closer to the date, I'll provide you with more information. In the meantime, I'd like to remind you that you can listen to weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona productions streaming on the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org or on the Sun Sounds of Arizona app, available from the App Store for your iPhone or iPad, or the Google Play Store for your Android phone or tablet. And finally, you can always listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona streaming on your Amazon Dot or Echo.